Session number 8327.
Mr. Barrow, tape 6. You were on Gallipoli right up until the end, I believe,
yeah.
Mr. Barrow.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you'd be good enough to tell me about the lead up to the evacuation. Did you, for instance, know that the troops from Anzac and Suvla had been evacuated in December?
I don't know. I didn't know much about the Anzacs, really.
You hadn't heard of the evacuation in that area?
No. Oops.
So...
No, I don't know.
So far as you knew, that there had been no evacuation earlier than the one you
Not
participated
that I know
in?
Of. No.
Right. Well, could you tell me then about the evacuation of January the 8th and 9th, 1916? When did you first realise that you were all going to be evacuated?
Well, I don't know that we... I don't know, really, that we thought very much about it, except we were taking various loads of stuff, perhaps 3 or 4 days or more, down to the Cape Ellis area and put onto a dump. And I presume at some time they were going to blow this dump up, either by shell fire from sea or time bombs. And so that's what we were doing. And then the vet came and shot a few horses, our horses. They shot them in situ, just where it was an old bombing practice range close to us, very close to us. And they dropped the horses, if possible, in the trenches, and that was the end of them.
Was that upsetting for you all?
Oh, yes, I think so. It looked a shame, but I don't know how they were going to... had to evacuate them. I did see them loading one or two horses on one of my visits to the Cape Ellis prior to the evacuation. But I think they'd shoot the older ones. But I never saw them shooting any mules. No. And of course they left us with a few horses, including 4 that we... drove the last ambulance down. Now the rest of the, in my own way of describing, was that sometime during the 8th, the rest of our company, I'll call it company or unit, this transport, small transport unit, of perhaps at the most then about 20, 25 men, and a few wagons and oddments. But I don't think they took an ambulance. I think they must have only had one ambulance left, I should think. Perhaps they'd taken them beforehand. So that we were left, I don't know what time of the day it was, but I presume it was early afternoon when they all, I'll say early afternoon, it might have been late afternoon or when, I don't know. And we were detailed, this other driver and I, to stay in that place by Enniskillen Avenue and wait. It was a very loose order, couldn't be looser, to see if any stragglers or wounded or casualties, anything like that, came along and we could give them a lift down to the base.
So you still had a horse, did you?
With two horses, yes, with... We were at 4 horses between us. That was a 4-horse team for the ambulance. And there it was, so I can't remember what time of the day it was. But I think we'd had our midday meal, and then they all went off. So there was only this driver and I left by Enniskillen Avenue. I say Enniskillen Avenue because it ran into the gully, just where we were based. And we stayed there, and it was to stay, using our own sense, as to how long we stayed. And we must have been very naive or dumb to think, well, it's going to be a walkover, this is. We'll just go down to the beach and get on the boat, and that's it. But it wasn't just quite like that, was it? Because the Turks had to be held in the position to enable most of the troops to get off. So we stayed in this position, and we never saw anybody else. So we messed about all afternoon, I suppose. Brewed up tea and had a bit of a snack of whatever we had. I think there'd be biscuits and a bit of cheese or something. We had our iron rations. I forget what they were composed of. They said hard biscuits and perhaps a tin of bully, something like that. They're only little bags, you know, tea and sugar. So we brewed up and perhaps had a bit of grub. I think we fed the horses. Fortunately, we'd got some water. But prior to them taking the water cart away, I think we had the sense, or somebody had, to fill dixies that were not being used for stew, to tell these 2 gallons. I suppose we'd have about 4 of these dixies. I rather fancied there was some water in the district where we could go and get it if we had a receptacle. Anyway, there it was, we mooned and messed about, fed the horses, and then it started getting dusk. And every time in dusk, you know, they have a stand to at dusk, the infantry do. And everybody's mounted up and they're on the lookout for any attacks or raids and things like that. Anyway, I think we'd given the horses a bit of a food and a drink later on, perhaps in the afternoon. And then we harnessed them up already. I forget whether I think I'd be in the wheels driver, but it wouldn't matter very much. We knew the way, although it was dark. We had to go up this rather winding hill to get onto the top road, or we could go the beach road, something like this along here. But for some reason or other, I think we thought, well, that road might be cluttered up a bit, this narrow road, beach road. I think everybody would like to go that way. So we went over the top, a road that we were used to, that we had that awful shelling chased fairly right along, but it led right to the dump where we had to dump this ambulance and let the horses go and make our way as best as we could to get on the boat or what have you.
It must have been a very weird feeling because
yes,
there was no one about.
Very weird.
Were you frightened that you might get left behind?
And, you know, it never struck us really, I don't think. I think we were, as I say, most naive about this. We thought it was like a cakewalk, really. Until when it started going dark, and we could hear that then we heard rifle fire. So we went a long way off it, you see. We probably, as the crow flies, perhaps 1,000 yards off the front line. And we heard this desultory sort of rifle fire, some here and some over there and that, you know. I suppose it was the troops making the Turks believe that all the trenches were occupied.
Do you think that happened, that they fixed up dummy apparatus?
I think so, could do. I did hear that they fixed up like perhaps a burning candle to on a long fuse. Perhaps to some part of the rifle. Perhaps in the magazine or the barrel somewhere, where it let off a shot, or it might have just been anything like that to make some sort of rifle gunfire. And we could hear this, and it died and came again and died and that sort of thing. So when it got to dusk, well, we thought, well, it's about time. But no, we never saw anybody or heard anybody. It was very uncanny, really, and looking back, I'm more scared now than I was then. I realised what a loose order it was, really. Never told it. I doubt whether we had watches. I hadn't a watch.
Seems you could easily have been left behind.
We could have been. Aye, it strikes me more now than then. But when we kept hearing the rifle fire, we thought, oh, well, it's all right, there's troops in front of us. So, and nobody's coming down, they wouldn't know where we were. So we hitched the horses up and went up this hill and got on the top road and more or less either jogged trot or just went along to the dump. And I rather fancied there were still lights in this hospital that was in the centre, that was well protected by Red Cross signs, so it was never shell or pretty close. When we got chased, we went a long way off the hospital. However, nothing happened, and we got through. It was quite darkish, but it wasn't a black night. And we parked the ambulance on this dump, let the horses free. The sergeant said, oh, shoot him, you know. He was a casual sort of fella. Well, we never had any guns or anything to shoot him with anyway. We couldn't carry them in a Red Cross wagon. And in any case, it's not so easy to shoot a horse as you'd think, really.
Is that so?
That is so. Well, the vets that used to come with a humane killer and just hold it right in the centre of the forehead and pull the trigger or whatever they had, and then that down the horse. And I should think very often, I don't know whether they did it the same with these horses, they put a cane down and rattled a brain like they did in the old fashion when they killed animals in the slaughterhouses. Anyway, they killed these horses perhaps 2 or 3 days before. So,
what was the scene like there when you left your dump and let your horses go? You know, was there a great big pile of stones?
Aye, there seemed to be.
And had anything been set afire at that
no,
stage?
No, nothing. There was just a little way, open way, where we just ran this ambulance down. And untraced the horses, and stripped them of their gear, you know, the traces, saddles, bits, the head pieces, and everything. Dumped that on the, and just let the horses go. And then it was up to us to get off the place.
So what did you do? How did you accomplish that?
Well, I lost sight of this chap after a bit. I don't know whether I lost him on the beach or not, but I never saw him again. And we got to the beach, and I suppose it was somewhere around the Clyde, although I don't remember ever seeing the Clyde. And, I sat with some other fellows. There weren't a great lot of people there. I sat under the cliff a bit, low cliffs, you know. I'm only half as high as these. Just sat there and nothing was happening. Asiatic Annie put a shell or two across, and then there was a horrid cry of stretcher bearers. Somebody had been hit. And I thought, well, it's no use sitting about here. I thought perhaps there'd be somebody in charge to take all these. They'd be stragglers, these chaps, I should think, from various units and oddments, that had come down to the beach to be evacuated. But there didn't seem to be anybody in charge or asking questions, were you aware, anything like that. So after a bit, it wasn't a bad night, I suppose it was cold, but I got my overcoat on me and my haversack. I don't think I'd got my pack. I don't think I had my pack, I'd just my skeleton order, just haversack and water bottle. It's about all I had, I should think. I wouldn't have much else anyway. An overcoat, of course, which I wore, it must have been cold, I should think. And I went rambling about on the beach. And eventually, and I didn't go through the River Clyde with this boat. I must have come across this boat by a jetty, I should think. You see, we didn't know much about the beach after we'd landed. It was never our job, really, to go to the beach. We just went to a casualty clearing station at the beach, and that was it. We didn't even go for rations. We must have gone to a store. So we weren't hadn't any knowledge of the actual beach and the River Clyde once we'd left it. But anyway, I rambled along this beach road, a beach place, and eventually, very luckily, found that a boat was tied up to this jetty, it must have been, and I simply walked on this boat. Nobody said nay or hey or anything.
What sort of boat was it, Mr. Burrows?
A sort of what?
What sort of boat was it?
I remember it very well indeed. And I'll tell you for why. It was a G&J Burns steamer that used to do holiday trips from Liverpool round the Western Isles of Scotland. And when I was at Thomas Cook and Sons, I think we'd booked some holiday people on this G&J Burns steamer.
Was it very crowded?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, I don't think I ever sat down. You leaned and that sort of thing, and the sea was pretty rough.
And this would have been dark then, would it?
Oh, yes. Yes.
As you
looked, it wasn't pitch black, though, you know. Of course, our eyes were good as youngsters. And the light would be, you know, it wouldn't be half light, it would be just not black.
As you looked towards Gallipoli when you were on the boat, what did you see as you drew away?
I don't think we saw very much, to tell you the truth.
Were there any fires?
I don't think so.
Was there any noise?
No, I don't think there was.
How about the state of the sea? Was that very
crowded?
That
was a bit rough.
But was it crowded with craft and, you know, ships?
No, I don't think so. No, we got away, to me, quite cleanly. And it, as I say, it was a bit rough. And I don't know how many would be on this boat. I should think it was licensed, perhaps, as a holiday craft, perhaps, I don't know, 800 people.
Perhaps mostly less. Standing.
Aye, but there'd be perhaps might have been a couple of hundred, 150 on. I know it was jolly crowded. You couldn't sit down on the deck, even if you wanted to. I think I stood up most of the time, or hung on to the taffrails.
Were these soldiers quiet?
Oh, yes.
Aye. They kept quiet. Were you told to be quiet?
No, not especially. I never spoke to anybody except a few oddments.
So there was, it seems to, in your case, to have been a total lack of supervision.
Yes.
Or organisation.
It was, as far as I was concerned.
You were just left to fend for yourself.
Yes.
Is that so?
Yes.
Your officer, did you see him
never
again?
Never saw him. I think he'd be one of the first officers, I think.
What was his name, this officer?
I think it was Stoddard.
Stoddard?
I shouldn't say too much about him. I shouldn't bother to say anything.
So how did you feel then, leaving Gallipoli after this time?
Well, I felt very, very relieved that I was getting off it, especially as I was probably the last of my unit.
Yes, do you think that boat was one of the last to leave, the one you got on?
I don't suppose it would be too late, you know. I don't know what time it would be. Because, reckoning all up, we must have got to Mudros, where we disembarked, again all haphazard. I never heard anybody giving any commands or anything. We just walked off it, and I just got a bit talkative with two or three fellas, three or four chaps, and that was as far as it was. We were never directed anywhere. It must have been on another quiet little jetty place on Mudros. And I know it was a pretty nasty night, as they are in January, aren't they? And eventually, we were only mooching about. We didn't know which way to go. No idea where anybody else was. But we saw a light up in the hill. And we went up there to this light and knocked at the door. And a rather biblical sort of fellow came out in all clothed in sheepskins. He must have been a shepherd type in the old patriarchal way of wearing sheepskins. But it'd be jolly cold up there in winter, I can tell you. So he let us, and he couldn't stop us, but we stepped in this barn that was a lot of chaff in it, and plus it was a bit like snowmen when we... Anyway, it must have... We had an hour or two sleep anyway. And then, you see, you're trying to fix up the hours in between. We must have had an hour or two sleep, I should think. Just lay down and nodded off, I suppose. Then when I say we got up in the morning, I suppose we were early risers, and off we went for our next saunter.
Where did that take you?
Well, we got rid of all this chaff as much as we could that was sticky stuff. And as we came down, we came across this camp that was absolutely flattened. And it must have been like that, good tents, all flat. One or two field kitchens, I noticed. And it must have been flattened in that terrific storm of January and left there as it was. And we meandered down. We just got down and walked along, I suppose, the beach somewhere. And eventually we came across what appeared to be, it'll tell you in the notes, a sort of army stores, or a hospital stores. I thought it was a hospital, but probably wrong. It was probably the stores, where they had hospital stores. And, of course, there were one or two fellows in it. And what happened? I think they made us some tea, gave us a roll of blankets each, there's 10 in a roll. So we put 5 down and 5 over us, cleaned ourselves up a bit, and I think they must have given us something to eat, I suppose. Anyway, we had another snooze, and I suppose that would bring round, the early hours of the morning. I don't know, it might have been perhaps... Well, I think it would be getting on for day... It would be daylight then, it would be perhaps 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, I should think. Anyway, we'd pass the night somewhere. And then we moved on again. I suppose we directed to some unit or other where we reported to, and then we were sorted out then.
Then, of course, you went to Egypt, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yes. Now, obviously, I can't unfortunately ask you about your experience in Egypt today, but I wonder what you feel, looking back at your experience at Gallipoli, about the organisation of the whole affair, from your point of view.
I don't think it was very good, you know. I don't think it was very good, and the discipline was very bad with us. Better you more or less did what you want, and you rambled on to parade. Well, there wasn't so much to parade, there were only 20, 30 of us. And you'd have a rouse parade at 6 o'clock where you got what they call gunfire. That was a mug of tea. You groomed the horses in a sort of half-hearted manner. And that's it, cleaned the horse lines up a bit. And that's about it. Unless you were detailed to go down to the base for rations or stand by with an ambulance or what have you, with nothing to do. And the officer had nothing to do, no wonder he took to drink. Be bored stiff all the time. A decent fellow.
Did you have any idea of the overall organisation of Gallipoli, the whole campaign?
Looking back now, I thought it was a mess, really. And so did my friend, who saw more of it than I was, and him, did you? It was disgraceful.
Why was it disgraceful?
Well, I think he said it was, and I read a book on Suvla Bay, which condemns the whole lot, you know. A lot of squabbling between the French and the English, and a lot of arguments as how they were going to force the Narrows. Should they attack without forcing the Narrows, or should they just have a naval action? There was a lot of squabbling at high-ranking places. And, of course, it was Churchill, the retinue, who was behind it all. And then they couldn't spare Ian Hamilton. He was the man in charge of all the armed forces, and they were based at Imbros on the boat called the Arcadian, which the troops had run aground on empty whiskey bottles. You know, I think the troops were a bit. I don't know. I don't think there's much faith in the whole thing, really.
Do you find that your own experience on Gallipoli confirmed that account?
Well, we were very sloppy with discipline. And they say, well, I don't know. We never clean. Well, of course, you don't clean your buttons anyway. And it never had your tunic on. It was so hot. But you never... You shaved, you know, but and bathed in the sea, that's about all. Not all of them bathed in the sea. And that's the thing, everybody was absolutely lousy. We hadn't a bad cook, he made the best of it.
If anyone transgressed and sort of broke rules, would they have been punished in your little group?
The only place I saw was a man tied to a limber.